chanting and dancing in ecstasy. This is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Translations. Many other mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Translations. Many other rivers, both big and small, flow from the top of Mount Meru. These rivers are like daughters of the mountain, and they flow to the various tracts of land in hundreds of branches. Amongst the nine varshas, the tract of land known as Bharat Varsha is understood to be the field of fruitive activities. Learned scholars and saintly persons declare the other eight varshas to be meant for very highly elevated pious persons. After returning from the heavenly planets, they enjoy the remaining results of their pious activities in these eight earthly varshas. Om Agyantaminandasya Ginangina Shalakaya Chakshurimiditam Jainatasmaya Sivadavenuha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jainabhutale Shvayam Rupakadamayam Dadanti Svapadantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhaktivindam Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Mamrim, Shram, Om Param, Tataka, Hataka, Kesha, Kajalat, Pedaka, Lopchana, Vidvaraka, Naka, Svarsa, Vasa, 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 So once again, the Srimad Bhagavatam is giving us a very detailed description of this material world. Bhagavatam describes not only the nature of the spiritual world and the activities thereof, but also the nature of and the activities that are going on with this within this material creation. Here it is describing in great detail different heavenly situations within this material creation. Interestingly, Prabhupada describes that on the heavenly planets, Svargaloka, characterized by the fact that there is so much facility for sense enjoyment. But this verse is describing that that heavenly situation is not existing not only on the higher planets, but those heavenly situations are also here on the earthly planet, because three types of heavenly planets are described: Bhoma, Svarg, and Pandani. Svargaloka means the planetary systems which are above the earth. But the Bhoma Svarg means, even within this earthly platform, this earthly plane, there are sometimes heavenly situations which are created by the Lord for the facility of pious souls. Prabhupada mentions one of those heavenly situations as Kashmir. Probably none of you have been to Kashmir, because we generally don't go there when we go to India. We go to places like Vrindavan or Jagannath Puri or Srinath Mayapur. We're not so much interested in going to Kashmir, although the opportunities for material pleasure are very great there. Kashmir, you've maybe seen pictures, is a very, very beautiful place. Nice forests are there, and there's very clean and beautiful rivers, and aesthetically it's very, very pleasing to the senses. But devotees don't go there because we're interested in the transcendental realm of Sri Vrindavan Dham or Mayapur or Jagannath Puri. But the facility is there, and especially pious souls take birth there. To be born into a situation like that means that one must have performed pious activities in his previous life. Another situation which Prabhupada mentioned was Hawaii. I don't think any of you have ever been to Hawaii either, but Hawaii is also like a heavenly planet. There's no snakes there, there's no poisonous insects, maybe there's a few mosquitoes, but the weather is always very nice. There's only one season, which is early summer, and it stays like that for the entire year. Maybe there's some little rainy season, but no one is disturbed. There's lots of beaches and surf and lots of nice fruits and vegetables and so on. And Prabhupada actually said that Hawaii was a remnant of the Dipura Yuga. In the Dipura Yuga, people were much more pious, and therefore the situation was much more materially better at the mercy of the demigods. But, so these situations exist. Heavenly pleasures are available in such places. So we can get an idea, a little bit, of what the heavenly planets are by studying the situation here on the earth. In the same way, we can understand a little bit what the hellish planets are like. Because we see both on the earth. We see heavenly situations and we see hellish situations as well. There's places you can go like Bosnia, you can go to Sarajevo, and you can see what real hell is like. You can go to Iraq or Iran and see what hellish conditions are like. There's many places you can go on this earth, and you can see both heavenly and hellish conditions. So we can get an idea. An intelligent person can get an idea that although someone is living in a very heavenly opulence like Kashmir, Hawaii, still he's not happy. He's still not happy. And we can see the hellish conditions that are there in certain places on the earth, and one can conclude this is also part of material existence. It's the whole picture, not just half the picture, not just enjoyment, but also there's also suffering. And one can come to the intelligent conclusion that nowhere within this material universe is there a permanent situation where one can be happy. One can wander throughout the entire universe. Brahmanda Bhamatikam Bhagivanji, which we have been doing since time immemorial. We've also been in the heavenly planets. We've been on this earth. And we've also been in the hellish conditions of the hellish planets. Brahmanda Bhamatikam Bhagivanji. We've been through all these situations. But wherever we are, we're always in a distressful situation. Therefore, the intelligent person, he looks for an alternative. He looks for a way out. So fortunately, by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, within all these planetary systems, there are always holy places where a devotee can go and cultivate Krishna consciousness. It's very difficult to cultivate Krishna consciousness when there's great opportunities for sense enjoyment, such as on the heavenly planets. It's very difficult to cultivate Krishna consciousness when one is in great misery, one is always suffering, such as in the hellish planets. These situations are very difficult. But by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are oases in this desert of material existence. It's like if one is going through a desert, sometimes by the arrangement of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even in the driest desert, you can come across an oasis. One time we were traveling in Egypt, before I was a devotee, we were traveling in the deserts there outside where the pyramids are. And I was noticing how you just go for miles and miles and miles and miles, and it's just desert. All of a sudden you come across a green oasis. It was interesting. How in the world, in the middle of this desert, there's a green oasis? And there would be a water there and a pond there. And for centuries, this would be the places where the caravans would stop in the desert. And the camels and the people who were in the caravan, they could refresh themselves and make it to the next destination. So that was nature's arrangement, ultimately Krishna's arrangement. So similarly, within this material world, from the heavenly planets to the earthly planets, and even in the lower planetary systems, there are transcendental oases where the conditioned souls who are suffering in this material existence, and everyone is suffering, even if you're in the heavenly planets, you're also suffering, because without Krishna consciousness, how you can be happy? Just satisfying your senses is not going to make you happy, because by nature you're a spirit soul. And how can the soul actually enjoy that which is material? It's a different nature. So by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, there are these transcendental oases, they're holy places, where one can go and get relief from the miseries of material existence. And by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, most of those holy places are actually found on this earth planet. Therefore, we said yesterday, for various reasons, the demigods are lining up on the heavenly planets, waiting to take birth on this earthly planet. Because there's so much opportunity for reviving our Krishna consciousness here on this earth planet. Why are there so many holy places on this particular planet and amongst all the planets within this universe? When you look in the sky and you see all the stars, those are not actually stars, Prabhupada said. Those are planets. Those are all different planetary systems. It's all mixed. Some are higher, some are lower. So out of all those planets that you see in the sky, this is a special planet, the Earth planet, because it is here that Krishna actually appears and performs his transcendental pastimes. Although we read in the Bhagavatam how Krishna sometimes visits the heavenly planets. He does visit the heavenly planets, but that's generally when there's an emergency. When the demigods get into some type of trouble, the asuras attack, then Krishna, or Vishnu rather, Vishnu comes there riding on Garuda and he saves the devas from the attack of the asuras. And they have a short darshan, and then he goes back to Vaikuntha. But Krishna is very kind to this particular dweep, which we live on. Dweepa means island, so sometimes the dweep or varsha means like an island. So we think of an island in an ocean. So the planets are actually considered like dweepas or varshas in the great ocean of material existence. They're floating islands. So it is the Lord's special mercy that once in a day of Brahma, he appears on this earthly planet in his original transcendental form. The Lord is also visiting other places, but generally that is his Vishnu incarnation, his Vishnu expansion. But once in a day of Brahma, he personally appears on this earth planet. Once in a day of Brahma means four yugas taken together times 1,000. 1,000 four cycles is one day of Brahma, and four times those cycles, four cycles, 1,000 times again is one night of Brahma. So that's how rare it is that Krishna actually appears. Once in that day of Brahma, he's appearing on this earth plane. And also in that same period, that same four cycles that Krishna appears, Gauranga Mahaprabhu is also appearing. Lord Chaitanya doesn't appear in the other ages as he does in this particular age in which we have fortunately taken our birth. Kali Yuga, fortunate? Yes, we're fortunate because Krishna appeared in his original transcendental form 5,000 years ago. And 4,500 years after Krishna appeared, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. And 500 years after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, Krishna's dearest devotee, Srila Prabhupada, appeared. And within his lifetime, or just after his lifetime, we've also somehow taken our birth here on this planet. And Prabhupada's teachings are easily available to us. The transcendental pastimes of Krishna have been recorded in the Vedic scriptures by Srila Vyasadeva. And one can actually go to Bharatvarsha, that particular place where Krishna's lotus feet touched the holy land. In other words, that land became holy by the touch of the lotus feet of the Lord. So there's so many places you can go for sense gratification. Just as there are places that materialists go for sense gratification, similarly there are places where devotees go for purification. Prabhupada once told us that he was actually lecturing to us in Paris. He said, people come to Paris for sense gratification, and they go to London to get educated. So just as there are certain places where you can go to fulfill your material desires throughout this entire universe, there's a few places you can go to awaken your Krishna consciousness. And we're fortunate enough to be on one of those planets where you can go and actually absorb yourself in Krishna consciousness where the Lord has performed his transcendental leela. Those are called holy dhams. And the Vaishnavas have their special dhams, because there's also dhams within impersonalists go, like Rishikesh, Haridwar, Benares. But the Vaishnavas, they have information of those special places like Vrindavan, Puri, Mayapur, where we can go and become enlightened in Krishna consciousness. We're not interested even in going to the heavenly planets. It takes great effort to go to the heavenly planets. You have to perform many lifetimes of pious activities, and then almost mechanically you're elevated there. We don't have to bother ourselves with that process. Of course, it takes some trouble also to go to India and visit these holy places. But the influence of such transcendental places should not be underestimated. For example, in the Bhagavad Gita, we hear how the Kauravas were at a great disadvantage because the battle was to be fought at a holy place like Kurukshetra. So it appears that holy places such as Kurukshetra and other places like that, they have a special potency about them. What is that special potency? That special potency is that by the touch of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they become transcendentally surcharged. Just like if we take some ordinary vegetable or some fruit or some grain, some rice, and then we prepare that material element in devotion to Krishna, and we offer it to Krishna in devotion, then we know that by the glance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because all of the Lord's transcendental senses are interchangeable, he eats through his eyes or through hearing the prayers of his devotees. In any case, by contact with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that material element becomes spiritual. It doesn't become 50% spiritual or 75% spiritual, but it becomes actually totally spiritual. It may appear to our material senses to be, you know, material, but actually by the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that material item becomes transcendentally surcharged. Prabhupada gives the example of an electrician who has the electricity at his control. With that electricity, he can turn something into hot or the same thing into cold. He can take a material element and make it hot, or he can take another material element and make it cold according to his desire. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the source of all energies. He can turn matter into spirit and spirit into matter. Originally everything was spiritual. Everything was Brahman. But the Lord takes that spiritual energy and turns it into the material creation. And again, that matter can be transformed again into spirit through the process of devotional service. So when the Lord comes to this material world, he chooses a particular place to make his appearance. That place where he comes and performs his transcendental pastimes, that place becomes surcharged with transcendental energy. It's not only that the Lord comes, also when he comes, Prabhupada said he brings the whole spiritual world with him. He brings Srimati Radharani, he brings the gopis, he brings the gopas, he brings the cows. As Prabhupada would often say, when a king travels someplace, then he takes his whole entourage with him. So 5,000 years ago, when the Lord was considering the appeal of Mother Bhumi through Lord Brahma to take birth here, he was considering that he would come here. And actually, our acharyas have described that because he can never be separated from Srimati Radharani, he also asked Radharani if she would come. But Radharani wouldn't come unless her sakis were there, so she said they also have to come, and they didn't want to come unless, you know, the Jamuna River was there and Govardhan Hill was there, because the devotees are attached to all these transcendental places and the opportunities of rendering devotional service there. So she said she would only come unless the whole of Vrindavan Dham came. So Krishna agreed. That is the history of how Vrindavan actually appeared on this earth. Krishna accepted the appeals of the demigods to take birth on this earth and rectify the situation with the demoniac kings. But because he is inseparable from the love of Srimati Radharani, he requested her to come, but she wouldn't come unless all of Vrindavan came. So then the whole entourage came. Goloka Vrindavan became Gokul Vrindavan. And that abode of Vrindavan, that is the most holy of all holy places. Because according to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, it is none different than Krishna himself. Therefore, to go to such a holy place, such as Vrindavan, is actually essential for a devotee's progress in Krishna consciousness. Rupa Goswami has described, like we said yesterday, out of all the different activities of Krishna consciousness, which our acharyas have given us, five are particularly potent for becoming a pure devotee of the Lord. Chanting the holy names of the Lord, hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, worshipping the deity, associating with devotees, and living in a holy place. And when one has that transcendental vision, when he's living in such a place, he can actually perceive the pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Prabhupada said when he first went to Vrindavan, He was expecting to see Krishna appear behind a bush at any moment. Of course, when we go there, we just see the bush. But it's possible. If one purifies his senses. Because at the present moment, we have the material senses, but within is the spirit soul. And we describe it generally as a particle of spiritual energy. It's the spark of life. There's that famous ISKCON video, the spark of life. So one might imagine a spark of life like a spark of fire or something. But actually it's more than a spark of life. It's more than just consciousness. The soul is a person. And a person means senses. So the spiritual senses are there. And it's with those spiritual senses that one can perceive spirit. One cannot perceive spiritual things with material senses. Actually, the material senses are covering the spiritual senses. So when those spiritual senses are awoken, are revived, the process of Krishna consciousness, one can perceive that which is transcendental. So that is the whole process of devotional service, that we are engaging our senses in the service of the Lord. And by engaging these material senses in the service of the Lord, they become spiritualized and our spiritual senses are reawoken. And then we can see these transcendental things. So when we go to such a place, as Vrindavan or Mayapur, the most important way to revive those spiritual senses is to hear from the saintly persons that are living there. All the spiritual processes are important for advancing in Krishna consciousness. But actually, out of all of them, the most important is association with devotees. Because when we chant Hare Krishna, especially we're chanting in the association of devotees. That type of chanting was recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Especially that type of chanting. Krishna Varnam Tusha Krishna Shanga Panga Shaparshadam Yagnai Sankirtan Payar Shantihi Sumedasaha. That type of kirtan, or chanting of the holy names, was particularly recommended by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, there were devotees who were chanting. But he recommended chanting in the association, Samkirtan, the complete glorification of the holy names of the Lord, is done in association of devotees. Because obviously when you're chanting with many devotees, the sound vibration of Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Hare, it's particularly loud. And Sri Rupa Goswami has recommended in Nectar of Devotion that the holy names should be chanted loudly in order to capture the mind. Therefore, we find that we're in the association of many devotees who are chanting. It's very loud, and the combined enthusiasm of the devotees in chanting the holy names penetrates the heart and purifies the heart. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually asked Haridas Thakur how all the sinful living entities in this age will be delivered. And again, Haridas Thakur said, by the loud chanting of the holy names of the Lord. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. So therefore, chanting the holy names of the Lord, which is one of the five main processes of Krishna consciousness, it's required to chant in the association of devotees. And hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, we must hear Srimad Bhagavatam from a devotee. There are others who are reciting the Srimad Bhagavatam, but because they're not devotees, they cannot actually properly transmit the pure message of Krishna consciousness because they themselves have some personal motivation. But a devotee has no personal motivation. His motivation is simply to glorify the Supreme Personality of God. And that type of transcendental sound vibration is especially purifying. So also hearing Srimad Bhagavatam means to live in the society of devotees, in the association of devotees. Worshipping the deity. We learn the process of deity worship from the devotee spiritual master. So living in a holy place also, the same principle is applicable. That when we go to a holy place, we get the full benefit of that holy place by associating with devotees. That is what is meant by tattva darshana. Tattva darshana means we see through the eyes of devotees. How do we see? How do we see through their eyes? When they're preaching Krishna consciousness. That is how we understand their realizations to their preachings. When a saintly person preaches Krishna consciousness, it's almost as if a very clear picture is painted. And we see, oh yes, now I understand. Therefore, those who go to holy places and don't take advantage of the saintly persons who are living there, they don't get the real advantage. Of course, there's always some advantage. Just like there's an advantage when one just hears the sound vibration of Krishna's name. But then the real advantage is when one chants the holy name purely. So there's always some advantage in any way we come in contact with Krishna. But when going to the holy dham, the full advantage is taken in the association of devotees. Unfortunately, especially in Kali Yuga, unscrupulous men, they take advantage to go to these holy places for some material reasons. Just like Prabhupada mentioned, he once knew a grain merchant who, during the day, he opened his shop and he was selling grains. But then afterwards, in the late afternoon, he would close his grain shop and he would put on the saffron cloth of renunciate and he would go begging. And Prabhupada remarked how he made more money begging than he did in his grain shop. Because naturally in India, people, they want to give to sadhus. If you give to sadhus, there's some spiritual purification, some benefit for you. So people take advantage. And you see, in the holy places, there's so many different types of people who are living. Although Prabhupada did remark one time in a lecture in Vrindavan that Krishna is very kind, he keeps the Mayavadis out of Vrindavan, generally. Because Vrindavan is so hot in the hot season, right now it's going into the hot season, and it is so cold in the winter season, the extremes are there, that, you know, unless you're really determined, and you really want to be Krishna conscious, then when you go to Vrindavan, you won't go to Vrindavan to live. They'll prefer some other place where they can go. So only devotees actually go to Vrindavan. We also go October, the season's very nice, or March. But if you've ever been in Vrindavan, in the hot season is very hot, and the cold season in December, January is also very cold. So Krishna's very kind. He protects Vrindavan from the Mayavadis. The Mayavadis, they have their own places where they go. Rishikesh, Haridwar, Benares, you can go and see them. So of course it takes great effort to go to these places. So the Lord is very kind, and that those sadhus who are residing in such places, those sadhus who are Krishna conscious, they travel and they preach Krishna consciousness. And just as the Lord, by His mercy, by His appearance, He made Vrindavan or Mayapur into a holy place. So similarly, wherever the devotee is going, who carries Krishna within his heart, and who is engaged in that fivefold process of devotional service, by that devotee's devotional service, that atmosphere becomes Krishna conscious as well. Just like when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was desiring to go to Vrindavan, but the devotees in Navadvip, in Mayapur, they could not bear the Lord's separation. So they created a little scheme whereby Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was actually tricked into going into a circle. Advaitacharya, he tricked the Lord. The Lord was thinking he was going to Vrindavan. After some time, then he saw the Ganges River, he thought it was the Jamuna River, but then he realized, oh, this is not Jamuna, this is actually Ganges. What has happened? I haven't made it to Vrindavan. So Advaitacharya, you know, who was devised this plan that the Lord wouldn't leave, and he said, no. He said, my Lord, wherever you are, that is Vrindavan. So wherever there is the Lord, which means His transcendental pastimes, we can feel the presence of Krishna. So the pastimes are still going on in Vrindavan. Even 5,000 years after Krishna's departure, the pastimes are still going on, because actually Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. He's so much captivated by the love of His devotees. So those who go to Vrindavan today and they have that pure spiritual vision, they can see Krishna's pastimes. They're eternal. And similarly, although it may appear that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was here 500 years ago and he departed, still his pastimes are going on. Those pastimes are still going on, and they're as potent today as they were 500 years ago. When Prabhupada would go to Mayapur, and he would travel by car from Calcutta to our Mayapur Chandadayar Mandir, then along that road you have to pass the Yogapith, or the place where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared. So Prabhupada would drive from Calcutta, and he would drive past the Yogapith and offer his respects, and he would go to our Mayapur Chandadayar Mandir. And sometimes, or quite often, Prabhupada's godbrothers, they would criticize Prabhupada, that you were driving right past the Yogapith where Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared. And you were going to your temple. You never stop and take darshan at the Yogapith of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Prabhupada's reply was that, yes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he appeared there 500 years ago, but the place of his pastimes are just as important. Wherever the Lord's Leela took place, that is also a very important, significant place. So he said, now the Leela of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is taking place in our Mayapur Chandadayar Mandir. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela. His Leela was that he wanted the Sankirtan movement to spread to every town and village of the world. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in that same mood, he was yearning for that day when the Bengalis would chant, Jai Sachinandan, Hare Krishna, with those who had taken birth in France and Germany and America, England and Russia. So all those devotees are coming and assembling on that ISKCON's property. So Prabhupada said, this is the Leela of Chaitanya's pastime. This is just as important. It's just as significant. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leela is spreading all over the world, creating that same spiritual atmosphere. So if we engage in the service of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and try to establish that mission, try to fulfill his desire to see the Krishna consciousness movement spread to every town and village, then we can also live in that transcendental atmosphere wherever we go. Of course, from time to time, it is favorable to go to such holy places to purify ourselves, and there's special transcendental potency there. But every Sankirtan devotee has had the experience that even in a Volkswagen van, by setting up an altar with the pictures of the Lord and his pure devotees, and cooking prasadam and offering to that picture, and having artik and chanting and going out and distributing books, that same spiritual atmosphere. So one can make the decision what he wants. He can go to Svargaloka at great effort to get sense gratification, only eventually to fall back down to the earth when one's pious activities are, the result of those activities are expired. With the simple process of chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, one can go beyond Svargaloka, even beyond Vaikuntha, to Goloka. One can create the same Goloka atmosphere, the fivefold process of devotional service. But again, that process is especially potent when we perform those processes in association with Krishna's devotees. And then all our desires will be fulfilled in the process of Krishna consciousness. Rantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Sri Vrindavan Dham ki. So questions? No questions? Yes.
Judge somebody who's advanced, how advanced they are.
How advanced Generally, it's understood that we are all sadhaka bhaktas. We're just beginning the process of devotional service. That's quite evident by the fact that where we came from, we may see within our movement some particular point, perhaps even now, I don't know, but we may see devotees, especially devotees who are born into Krishna consciousness, who are never have the opportunity for sense gratification, never become involved in sinful activities. And they take to Krishna consciousness in advance. Just like Prabhupada said, the children of our children, then we'll see the pure devotees. He said like that. We will see the pure devotees begin to manifest from our children's children. Because they will be born in, hopefully they'll be born into a society that has a wonderful structure where they can go through the Gurukul without having to become involved in any mental speculation or sinful activity or whatever. Just like Prabhupada, he never knew it was sinful activity. We have come from different backgrounds, engaged in all different types of nonsense. So we are now devotees, and we respect each other as devotees. We don't consider a devotee according to his past. So, but we are sadhakas, we're taking up the process of devotional service. So how do we judge how advanced one is, sadhaka, how advanced he is? By how strict he is in following that process. How strict the devotee is in the different, the basic practices of devotional service, chanting his 16 rounds, how strict he is in following the regulative principles. How serious that devotee is in studying the Shastras, and how serious that devotee is in taking up some seva, some service with the spiritual master. Because that is the definition, you might say that is the definition of a disciple, a student in Krishna consciousness. Tadvidi paripatena paripashana sevaya. A student has two duties. His first duty is to inquire from the spiritual master about the process of Krishna consciousness. Pariprashana, to make inquiry. Doesn't necessarily mean he has to personally ask the spiritual master, but inquiring is also, for example, hearing the lectures of the spiritual master, or, for example, reading Srila Prabhupada's books studiously, carefully. This is also a form of inquiring, or inquiring from other devotees, or discussing Krishna consciousness. So pariprashana, learning about the process. How serious one is about actually learning the process of Krishna consciousness. That takes personal initiative. How is it that some devotees make more advancement than others? Because some are more serious about inquiring. You only get out of something what you put into it. There's many students going to the college or the university. Some come out with wonderful marks, and some come out with mediocre marks, and some fail. And generally it's seen those who actually apply themselves, they come out with the better marks. So the whole process of Krishna consciousness, which involves, you know, attending the spiritual functions, the study of the scripture, associating with devotees, etc., that's all part of the pariprashana, or inquiring. So one who inquires seriously. And then sevaya, that's also another duty of a student, sevaya, pariprashana sevaya. One who takes, who assimilates those instructions, and who acts on those instructions, and renders service to the spiritual master, that's also the duty of the student. So we can see that some devotees take opportunity for service, and others don't. There's always, service is always available. There's always so much service to do. An enthusiastic devotee is engaged at all his waking hours. When he's not engaged in pariprashana, or inquiring or studying, the process of devotional service, the balance of his time is engaged in sevaya, in rendering service. To that degree that we can see a student is serious about inquiring in the process and assimilating and learning the process of devotional service, number one, and number two, taking up some responsibility to serve the spiritual master according to one's ability, according to one's capacity, then we can see how advanced one is on that particular platform, a the sadhaka. I think we should be concerned about that right now. The other levels of Krishna consciousness, raga, yoga, bhakti, and prema bhakti, that will come as a result of being good students. The teacher was himself once a good student. You can't become a good teacher unless you were once a good student. So we should, because that is our honest analysis of the situation, is that coming from the backgrounds that we have, we are all sadhika bhaktas. It'd be very, very rare to find a devotee who said that he's a nitya siddha, eternally liberated soul. So we're beginning the process of devotional service. To that degree that we are good students of our spiritual master, we can understand how advanced we are. Advanced means that we're advancing on the platform of that first stage of Krishna consciousness. Ado shraddha tata sadhu sangha ta bhajana kriya anartha nirviti syat. Once that those anarthas are freed from the heart, anartha means what is required for devotional service, and anartha means what is not required. So lust is not required, anger is not required, greed is not required. And when those things are removed from the heart to the process of bhajana kriya, or the regulative process, following the rules and regulations of devotional service, when those are removed, then one enters into another stage, nishta, ruchi, bhav. Then one begins to experience ecstatic symptoms. But until that point, that all those impurities are removed from the heart, then one cannot begin to understand, or at least experience, what are higher stages of devotional service like Raga and Yoga Bhakti. So how advanced a devotee is, at our stage at least, means how serious a devotee is in taking up the process of Raga and Yoga. And the result of that type of devotional service is that one will become very enthusiastic. One will be enthusiastic. If one is not practicing as one should, or to the degree that one should, then one will not be in contact with the transcendental energy. One will still be within the modes of material nature, or affected to some degree by the modes of material nature. But if one is pure, one is becoming purified, and one is in constant contact with that transcendental Gaura Shakti, the transcendental energy of the Lord, then one will become enlivened. Even in the beginning stages of the devotional service, one can be greatly enlivened. Prabhupada said the first result of devotional service, coming to a pure devotional process, is that one becomes freed from material anxiety. Why does one become free from material anxiety as a result of coming in contact with the pure process of devotional service? Very simple. One gives up those activities which are the source of distress. What's the source of distress? Sinful activity. It's a source of great distress. Because when you engage in sinful activity, the result is that you have to suffer. So immediately when a devotee comes to Krishna consciousness, he becomes free from material anxiety because he gives up those activities which are the source of anxiety. Not only gross sinful activity, but all forms of material activity. All his activities are dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. So that which was the source of his distress is immediately cut off. Just by the vow, I will no longer engage in material activity. So no one can be happy when they're suffering. You can only be happy in a healthy condition. So therefore, Prabhupada described in his poem, Tashila Bhakti Sananta Saraswati, that a healthy life is Chaitanyata, that is Krishna consciousness. We give up that activity which is the source of distress, and we engage in that activity which is the source of great happiness, devotional service to the Lord. It takes a little time, just like we mentioned the other day, when a child first wakes up, or when we first wake up. You know, it takes us a while to focus and see. We're awake, but we're not completely focused yet. So as we begin, we're just taken to the process of devotional service. Our spiritual senses are being awoken and enlivened. And to that degree that we cut off those material activities, not only externally, but also internally, they take up the process of devotional service, then we'll be enthusiastic. That is another sign of an advanced devotee. Spiritually enthusiastic to serve the instructions of the spiritual master. So those two things we could judge how advanced one is. How strict they are in following the process, the instructions, and how serious they are about serving their guru. That is actually one sign of advance and mentioned in Nectar of Devotion, that a devotee doesn't waste a moment. He's very enthusiastic to chant the holy names, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. That's one symptom of advancement mentioned in Nectar of Devotion. Another symptom is that a devotee doesn't waste a moment. Every moment he's engaged in some type of devotional service or devotional activity. Any other questions? Comments? You speak loud in Prahlad because I can't hear Prahlad of Kansas.
Kripana Bahu Dukarvaja, Kandutivan manam isam visheheta dhira. Kripanas, those who are not advanced in spiritual knowledge, and who are therefore just the opposite of brahmanas, generally take to family life, which is a concession for sex. Thus they enjoy sex again and again, although that sex is followed by many tribulations. This is a warning to devotees. To teach this lesson to devotees and to human society in general, Lord Sri Ramachandra, although the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself, underwent a series of tribulations because he accepted a wife, Mother Sita. Lord Ramachandra underwent these austerities, of course, only to instruct us. Actually, he never had any reason to lament for anything. Another aspect of the Lord's instructions is that one who accepts a wife must be a faithful husband and give her full protection. Human society is divided into classes of men, those who strictly follow the religious principles, and those who are devotees. By his personal example, Lord Ramachandra wanted to instruct both of them how to fully adopt the discipline of the religious system and how to be a beloved and dutiful husband. Otherwise, he had no reason to undergo apparent tribulations. One who strictly follows religious principles must not neglect to provide for all facilities for the complete protection of his wife. There may be some suffering because of this, but one must nevertheless endure it. That is the duty of a faithful husband. By his personal example, Lord Ramachandra demonstrated this duty. Lord Ramachandra could have produced hundreds and thousands of sitas from his pleasure energy, but just to show the duty of a faithful husband, he not only rescued Sita from the hands of Ravana, but also killed Ravana and all the members of his family. Another aspect of the teachings of Lord Ramachandra is that although Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead and his devotees, may apparently suffer from material tribulations, they have nothing to do with such tribulations. They are mukta purushas, liberated persons, under all circumstances. It is therefore said in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, Yata Dheka Vaishnavaram Yavavahara Dukha Nishchaya Janiya Taha Paramananda Shukra. A Vaishnava is always firmly situated in transcendental bliss because of his engagement in devotional service. Although he may appear to suffer material pains, his position is called transcendental bliss and separation, viraha. The emotions a lover and beloved feel when separated from one another are actually very blissful, although apparently painful. Therefore, the separation of Lord Ramachandra from Sita Devi, as well as the consequent tribulation they suffered, is but another display of transcendental bliss. This is the opinion of Sri Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur. Oma Gyan Chamirandasya Ginangina Shalakaya Chakshurimilitam Jenatas Mai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhisnam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Shwayam Rupakadamayam Dadantisva Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Kaur Bhakta Vrindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So there are many important instructions both in the verse and especially in Srila Prabhupada's purport, centered around the divine appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, in his incarnation as Lord Ramachandra. In this verse we hear how the Lord, as Ramachandra, along with his eternal consort, Srimati Sita Devi, and various devotees, such as Hanumanji, appeared within this material world. The Lord personally, or through his various expansions, appears in this material world whenever there is a disturbance which is created by the demons to protect his devotees. In that sense, sometimes Lord Krishna is addressed as Aruna Pada Pankajam. Aruna Pada Pankajam. This means that he whose lotus feet protect his devotees from all fearful situations. And a devotee who takes shelter of those lotus feet, he becomes Abhaycharan. He becomes fearless, having taken shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. So devotees are often harassed by the demons, because that's the business of the demons. Just as a devotee's business in life is to relieve others from distress, so it is the business of the demons to cause distress. This may be a little bit difficult for us to understand, but it's actually the case. Because we're taught, Vancha Kalpaturu Vyascha Kripa Sindhu Devacham Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevi Namo Namaha. We are trained to be merciful and compassionate, to be selfless, to sacrifice for the spiritual welfare of others. This is how we're trained. So when you're trained in a particular way, it's difficult to think in another way. Right? If you're trained from childhood to think in a particular way, then it's difficult to think otherwise. So it may be hard for us to conceive that, you know, materialistic people, they're trained in another way. In this modern civilization particularly, one is trained to be very selfish, to get sense gratification. And generally, sense gratification is always at the expense of others. For my happiness, I must exploit your senses. So, in many cases, a materialistic person, or say a demoniac person, he'll go to any means to achieve his sense gratification. Even if it means causing others distress. How many instances are there in the world where one country invades another country? It happens all the time. Out of greed, a desire for land, or wealth, or opulence, or prestige, or whatever the case may be, one country actually invades another country and so much suffering goes on. So many men are killed, so many women and children in these days and age. So for sense gratification, people will go to any extreme. Just like I've recently come from England, and in England I saw in the paper that the government has again made an order that 4 million cows are going to be slaughtered. They have some particular disease, which is contactable by human beings or something like this. So they're going, of course they were going to kill them anyway for meat, but this is the situation. The same government authorizes abortion, where so many innocent children are killed within the womb. So in this way we see that particularly the leaders of society, they harass the innocent members of society. Cows are considered an innocent member of society, brahmanas, women, children, elderly. They're defenseless by nature. They need protection. Every living entity should be protected so he can fulfill the ultimate goal of his life. Because everyone has the opportunity to approach the supreme destination. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that even the sudras, the low-born, the fallen brahmins, the women, who generally in Vedic culture don't have the propensity for spiritual life, still if they're protected and they're trained and they have proper association, Krishna says, they can also achieve the supreme destination and fulfill life's goal. But they must be protected in order to achieve that goal. Because they're so often exploited by others. Cows are exploited, brahmanas are persecuted, nowadays children are educated in what Prabhupada called slaughterhouses, mundane education. Elderly must be given the opportunity to spend the last years of their life in full Krishna consciousness. So it is the duty of the leaders of society to afford this protection and not exploit these innocent members of society. And when they're exploited to a great degree, then Krishna, out of his compassion, he comes to protect them. Ite chamsa kalopum sha krishnashtu bhagavan swayam indriya vyakalam lokam vidayun te yuge yuge. Shukadeva Goswami says that all the above mentioned incarnations are either plenary portions or portions of the plenary portions, but Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. Krishna is the original personality of Godhead, and Indriyam Vyakaram Lugam Vidalyam Te Yuge Yuge. All of them, these incarnations, the plenary portions of portions, the plenary portions, they appear in the material world whenever there is a disturbance created by the enemies of Indra. Indriya Vyakalam Lokam. Indra is known as a deva. He's a demigod. He's a devotee of the Lord. So his opposite of deva is an asura. So whenever the asuras cause problems to people like Indra, the devotees, then the Supreme Personality of Godhead appears. And Prabhupada quotes here in the purport, Prithunaya Sadhana Vinashaya Tridiskutam. He has two purposes, although actually he has three purposes. It's interesting that Prabhupada said he has two purposes. His third purpose is to establish religious principles. But Prabhupada is stressing or emphasizing this point, that when the Supreme Personality of Godhead comes, he comes to protect his devotees and annihilate those demons, those miscreants who harass the devotees. But it's interesting to note that when the Lord comes, the envy of the asura, the demon, is so great that he attacks God himself. It's bad enough that the asuras cause problems to the devotees, but they have lost their intelligence to the degree that they will even attack the Lord. This is amazing. Their business is to harass the devotees of the Lord, the demons. But they're so foolish that when the Lord himself appears, they think that they can attack him and kill him. This is how foolish they have become. They've lost their intelligence. This is a result of sense gratification, that one actually loses his intelligence. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that by contemplating the object of the senses, lust arises. From lust, one becomes attached, then anger, then one loses one's intelligence, and one falls down into the material whirlpool. This is the result of becoming attached to sense gratification in this world. Lust develops, then anger because you can't enjoy, then you lose your intelligence and you fall down into the material whirlpool. So they lose their intelligence to the degree that they cannot discriminate between themselves and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That they are the tiny jivatma, and the Lord is the Paramatma. Paramatma means the Supreme Soul. We generally think of Paramatma as the super soul within the heart, but Paramatma actually, Param means supreme, the greatest. He is the greatest of the souls. He is the Supreme Soul. Purushottama, he is the best amongst all men, although he's not an ordinary man. But they lose their intelligence to the degree that they think that they're equal to God. Because why would they fight him if they thought he was more powerful? Then they would lose. So this is the power of the illusory energy, that one can equate himself with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the power of the illusory energy, that the living entity equates himself with God. And in some degrees, he thinks he's better than God. Otherwise, why would the demon challenge the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he thought God was greater than him? He thinks he's greater than God and he can defeat God. He thinks he can become God. This is the power of the illusory energy. Just like I sometimes give the example, you see often a car, or let's say a truck, is going down the road. And sometimes you see the neighborhood dogs. They come out of their yard, maybe a little tiny dachshund, you know, a dachshund, a little dog like that, or a chihuahua, whatever, a little dog. He jumps over the fence and starts chasing the truck, and he tries to bite the wheels. You've seen that? This huge truck, and this little dog, he's chasing at the truck, he's going to bite the wheel. He tries to bite the wheel to bring the truck down. Madness. How can a little chihuahua bring down a big truck? Their false ego. So those who are influenced by the illusory energy as a result of their desires for sense gratification, they equate themselves as either equal or greater than the Supreme Personality of God. And out of envy, they challenge him. So when Lord Ramachandra appeared, he was challenged by Ravana. He thought, due to his pride as a result of his accumulated riches and power and prestige, that he could challenge the Supreme Personality of Godhead and win.
Krishna
during the final battle, when Ravana was engaged in combat with Lord Ramachandra, he began to feel the pressure. He began to see that actually Lord Ramachandra was extremely powerful. He couldn't understand it intelligently, but by practical experience in the midst of the battle, he began to perceive that although everyone was subservient to Ravana because of the boons he had achieved from Lord Shiva and the demigods, he was so powerful due to his material austerities and penances. When he came in contact with the Supreme Lord, who himself is the source of power of the demigods, Nitya Netyanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Ekobahanam Yovadidati Kamam, you know, he was insignificant. So he became afraid, and by his mystic power, because demons, they sometimes have these mystic powers, he disappeared and he went to the planet of Bali Maharaj, which is in the subterranean part of the universe, lower planetary systems. There, Bali Maharaj, he was given the position by Lord Ramanadev to look over that hellish planet. It's a service he's doing. He said he was born into a family of demons, Bali Maharaj, but by the mercy of Lord Ramanadev, he became a pure devotee of the Lord. So because he was part of that Asuric family, Ravana thought, oh, I'll go visit him and try to get some help from him to defeat this Ravana, or this Ramachandra, in battle. So he came to the palace of Mali Maharaj, and he knocked on the palace door, and he was brought in by Mali Maharaj's attendants, and he got to see Bali, and he said, you know, we have the same family. We are born in the family of the Asuras and the demons, and I need some help from you now. I'm engaged in combat with Lord Ramachandra, and only temporarily I have disappeared from the battle due to my mystic powers, and I've come here to ask for your assistance. Give me something by which I can defeat Ram. Bali Maharaj smiled because, although he also was very powerful, he was defeated by the Supreme Personality of Godhead in a dwarf incarnation. So he knew it wasn't really possible to defeat Lord Ramachandra. So he thought he'd try to enlighten Ravana a little bit. So he took him by the hand and he took him outside. He said, well, I can help you. I can give you this mountain which is made of a diamond. It was this huge diamond, tall as the sky there, situated. He said, you take it and you can use, you know, you sell it, use the money, buy some weapons. So Ravana went there and he tried to move that mountain, that diamond mountain. He couldn't even budge it one inch. And Bali Maharaj started laughing and laughing and laughing and laughing. So Ravana said, why are you laughing? I'm trying to get this done. He said, you're so foolish. He said, you know what that diamond is? That's the earring of Hiranyakashipu. That earring of Hiranyakashipu fell here when he was being killed by Lord Nrisimhadev. Lord Nrisimhadev had Hiranyakashipu in his lap, and he was digging his hot claws into the abdomen of Hiranyakashipu, and while he was taking out his intestines, you know, certain things, his sword fell, his helmet fell off, and one of his earrings fell off, and it fell down here to the lower planetary systems and landed here on my planet. He said, you can't even move the diamond earring that you wore in the previous birth when you were being killed by Lord Narasimhadev. And you think you can kill the same Lord in mortal combat in his incarnation as Lord Ramachandra? You couldn't defeat him in a previous birth when you had a huge body and you were wearing these earrings. And you think you can defeat him now? You're less powerful now than you were in your birth as Hiranyakashipu. And you think you can defeat the same personality of Godhead? But because he was so bewildered, Ravana didn't take the advice of Bali Maharaj, and he went back and continued the battle, and of course he was defeated. So this way the demons, they foolishly think that they can challenge the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now, when Lord Ramachandra appeared, Ravana challenged him by stealing his wife. That was the way he challenged. Well, the challenge began. Sitaram, Lakshman, they were in the forest for so many years. And, of course, we know the story. We've done the play 1,000 times. Sita was alone. Ravana had devised a trick where she would be alone. And he kidnapped her. In this way, he actually challenged the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada said, in this way, Ravana represents all materialistic men who want to enjoy the opulence of God without God. They want the kingdom of God without God. They want to enjoy the riches or the opulence or the images of God without God. They don't want to use it to serve God. They want to enjoy it separately. So to take it without acknowledging who it belongs to and without engaging it in the proper way in God's service, that's like stealing. Anyone who takes the material energy and doesn't utilize it for what it's meant to be used in the service of the Lord, because everything belongs to God, if one takes that energy and uses it for himself, he's guilty, in one sense, of the same crime as Ravana, to take what belongs to God and use it for oneself. So Ravana wanted to enjoy Sita Devi, who is the goddess of fortune, without the permission of the Lord. Krishna is always accompanied by the goddess of fortune. And she is manifest in this world in the form of money and riches, etc. So one who worships the Lord, Krishna will naturally have these opulences, but one who tries to enjoy Lakshmi or Sita without Narayan is doomed, just like Ravana. So that was his mistake. He actually, he kidnapped her himself, but he was unable to enjoy her. This is interesting. Ravana was such a powerful personality that the demigods were bowing down to his feet. He was like Hiranyakashipu. Hiranyakashipu conquered the three worlds, and it's described that the demigods were actually his personal servants. Narada Muni was actually engaged in the service of Hiranyakashipu. So as Ravana was also similarly very, very powerful, extremely powerful, he could defeat any mortal being. So how is it he couldn't enjoy a delicate princess? You see the picture of Sita Devi. Today she's on that asana there with Lord Ramachandra. Look how delicate she is. She's a fair maiden. How is it that a powerful Rakshasa who could defeat in combat hundreds or thousands of men could not enjoy a delicate princess? The story is that he could not do it because he was cursed. Actually, one time, Ravana, previous to the time that he stole Sita Devi, he made the mistake of abducting or kidnapping another princess who was actually the daughter of a great mystic sage. And he violated that young lady. He abused her. And when the sage heard this, he cursed Ravana, who was a young man at that time. He cursed him that should he ever try to enjoy a woman again, against her will, his head would split into 10,000 pieces. This is the curse he had. We hear of this curse several times in Vedic literatures. Also, Pandu had a similar curse, didn't he, Prabhupada? He would die if he tried to enjoy his wife. It was a little bit of a different curse. It wasn't... Anyway, it's another story. But, and he actually died from that curse. But anyway, Ravana, because he violated this young lady, her father cursed him, should you ever try to enjoy a woman without her consent, then your head will split into 100,000 pieces. But he was cursed. So he, although he had Sita, the goddess of fortune, there personally, you know, all he could do was, you know, come before her and say, you know, unless you agree to enjoy with me, I'll chop you up and serve you to my dogs for breakfast. He could only, that's just, he couldn't actually forcibly try to enjoy her. So Prabhupada said, in the same way, the materialistic people, they're cursed like that. That although they have so much material opulence, which is the energy of Lakshmi, they can't enjoy it. Of course, they don't have that specific curse that Ravana had. But everyone that's living in this world is like cursed in the sense that although they have that riches, they can't enjoy it. They can't enjoy it. The fundamental reason is simply that they're cursed that they're in this material world. And the spirit soul who is within this material world cannot enjoy the inferior material energy. The spirit soul is transcendental to this world. He's of the spirit, he's of another nature, he's spiritual. He's meant to enjoy spiritual pleasure as the servant of the Lord. And when he tries to enjoy the inferior energy, it's not compatible. It's an incompatible situation when the spirit soul tries to enjoy the inferior energy. It doesn't work. The soul within this material world, it's not a compatible situation. He can't mix. Just like we give the example sometimes of oil and water. If you take some oil and you put it in water, chemically they're two different things. They'll never mix. You can put them in a blender, just like they have a blender down here for the spices they put it in, or when they make their juices for the Lord, for his offering. They put it in and they make the nice, they have the milk and the sugar, a little water and maybe some orange juice, and you blend it and offer it to Krishna. Drink it if you please. Very tasty. Those elements, they mix very nicely. But should you put some oil in there and you try to mix that in, you'll see what happens in it. It always floats to the top. Oil and water never mix. You can blend them, you know, till you're blue in the face. In the end, they're still separated. By constitution, they can't combine together. So that's the same position. The spirit soul bloops into the material world. That was Prabhupada's, when he was talking about how the soul leaves Krishna's service, he gave the analogy in the form of bloop, he said one day in the 1960s. That kind of became ISKCON terminology. You won't find this word in Webster's dictionary, bloop. There's no word like bloop. Prabhupada was trying to describe how the soul, when he falls from Krishna consciousness, he falls into the ocean of material existence. Bhavan Buddhir, he falls into the ocean. And he probably, you know, when he would speak, it was, like we said yesterday, painting a picture through his preaching. So, boop, you know, something drops into the ocean, makes a bloop sound. So, living into the bloops, he falls into this material world, the ocean of material existence. And he's like that, he's of a different nature, different constitution. How can that which is eternal, full of knowledge and bliss, be compatible with that which is eternal, full of knowledge and suffering? It's like trying to put a round peg in a square hole. It doesn't work. You can try to force the situation, but it won't work. So the soul, no matter how much he tries to force the situation in this world, you know, he'll never be happy. So it's a curse. It's like a curse. Curse means that by superior dictation, something happens. Like when a brahmana would curse, because of his brahmana tejas, you know, his superior powers, that curse, no matter what you did to try to stop that curse, because of his superior brahmana tejas, that curse would take effect. In fact, when a brahmana would say a curse, he could never retract it. He could make some compromise in the curse, but he could never really retract it. So we're cursed in the sense that, you know, by being a spiritual by constitution, no matter what we try to enjoy here, we'll never be happy. That's the curse. And we see that no one is free from that curse. Even the rich people. Often in the prestigious people, when we travel as a sannyasi, we travel in different parts of the world and we meet, you know, very important people and wealthy people, prestigious people. We see that quite often they're the ones who are most affected by the curse because they have all that opulence, but they're always in anxiety they're going to lose it.
The government is going to tax them. The thieves are going to steal it from them. The family members are going to squander their riches away. So although they're the ones who are really in the most anxiety. So it's an illusion to think, that these type of things will make us happy. So everyone's cursed. Except the devotee who knows the science of Krishna consciousness, who utilizes Lakshmi, or serves Lakshmi, engages Lakshmi in the service of the Lord. One who worships Lord Vishnu along with Lakshmi will naturally have her blessings. Just like the demigods. We sometimes say, oh, demigods, this demigods. The Prabhupada said there's a very intimate relationship between human society, demigods, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We say, just worship Yajnavalkya Vishnu, just worship Vishnu, and all your desires will be fulfilled. Akamasava kamava moksha kamu dayadi tibinam bhakti yoginam yajite purusha punam. Whether you have, you're full of material desires, whether you have no material desires, whether you're desiring liberation, by all means worship the complete whole personality of Godhead. Don't go separately to the demigods. Don't try to water the tree by watering the branches and the twigs and the leaves. No, be intelligent. Water the root of the tree. By watering the root of the tree, everything else benefits. So in the same way, if you have desires, don't go independently to those who would administrate the fulfilling of those desires, the 33 cores of demigods. Go directly to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and by satisfying Him, all your desires will be fulfilled. Ultimately, your spiritual desires will be satisfied. But at the same time, Prabhupada said, although we don't worship the demigods, we don't disrespect the demigods. Because the demigods are agents of the Lord, they are the administrators of the Lord's creation. And as we said, there's an intimate relationship between human society, devas, and the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So the idea is that when the devas, who are devotees of the Lord, see that human society is worshipping their beloved, well, they shower their mercy. The Lord is very dear to the devas. So if they see, oh, you're glorifying their Lord, you're worshipping their Lord, then they're inclined to want to help you. Just like that if you see someone who's interested in Krishna consciousness and he comes and he wants to serve the deity, then you take a natural interest in that person and you want to help that person. So demigods are very powerful. It would be very nice if we had their blessings. It would be very nice if we had their blessings. We want their blessings to serve Krishna. We don't just sit idly around. We have so much service to do. We need so much facility for our service to our spiritual master in Krishna. If those who possess those things, are in charge of those things, give us their mercy, it makes our service so nice. So, we need Lakshmi. Those who are managers know you can have the best idea and the greatest plan, but if you don't have money, you can't execute it. Prabhupada actually says in the introduction to the Srimad Bhagavatam that to push on a movement like this, a spiritual movement like this, it's not just a question of just sitting there and meditating and chanting Hare Krishna and everything's going to happen. You need men, you need money, you need capital, you need facility. Look how expert Prabhupada was in these. He was the transcendental of this world completely, but he was expert in these affairs as well. And this is what Rupa Goswami means. A devotee is not negligent in material affairs, and he's expert at everything. This is why we encourage devotees to learn a profession by which you can actually serve the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So Lakshmi is something which is essential for the establishment of Krishna consciousness within this material world. So we require the blessings of Lakshmi Devi, but we know that we cannot have those blessings unless we want to utilize, our motivation is to use her blessings in the service of the Lord. So to the degree that we're actually pure like that, that we really do want to use her blessings, not that we, her blessings come and we give, we take 90% and give 10% to Krishna. To the degree that we can actually sacrifice everything in the service of the Lord, we will receive that, that grace. And actually we can see that Prabhupada has trained us like that. Ordinarily to acquire, you know, the opulence that ISKCON has, one has to work very hard, have a big business operation and so forth. But aside from devotees' businesses and some other things, we actually see that because Prabhupada has trained us that through preaching, by pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead, through preaching, which is his most important mission within this material world, Lakshmi naturally favors the devotees. She naturally favors the devotees. And that formula is there 5,000 years ago in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says, in the beginning I sent forth generations of men and demigods and blessed them that by the performance of this yajna, by the performance of yajna, all desirable things will be bestowed upon you. So in that sense, our principal activity in Krishna consciousness is to preach. And by preaching, yogakshemam bahamyaham, Krishna, the demigods, anyone, the blessings will be there from them. Yogakshemam bahamyaham. Krishna says, for those who worship me with love and devotion, I protect what they have and I provide what they lack. So Ravana wanted to enjoy, or rather to have Lakshmi without the blessings of Narayan. But a devotee naturally has Lakshmi's blessings because she's worshipping, or he's worshipping her beloved Lord. And she bestows those blessings naturally. So that is the formula for success. Although we should intelligently endeavor in such a way as to, you know, find different schemes and ways to do our businesses and bring in Lakshmi. We don't want to sit idly by. We should know that ultimately Krishna will be pleased to make these arrangements for us and to facilitate such arrangements when he sees that we're using that Lakshmi for the most important purpose, which is the spreading of Krishna consciousness. That we saw in the personality of Śrīla Prabhupāda, that Śrīla Prabhupāda, actually, before he came to America, he was, you could honestly say that Prabhupada was poverty-stricken. He was living in Vrindavan and he had little or no assets. And whatever he got, he was utilizing it, you know, for the production of his books, his Srimad Bhagavatams, which he envisioned he would take to the Western countries to start his Krishna consciousness movement. And then when Prabhupada actually came to the West and he was executing that desire of Śrīla Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, we saw that, because that was Bhaktisiddhanta, that was Prabhupada's desire, that was Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's desire, the Guru Parampara, Lord Chaitanya's desire. Then Prabhupada became actually one of the wealthiest men in the world. But he never took one farthing for himself. In fact, although there was millions and millions of dollars coming in, Prabhupada was still in the habit of checking the books to see if even one paisa was misspent. Those who were with Prabhupada in India, perhaps Shamwal could tell us, in India, Prabhupada was managing a very huge society because those days in India, only Prabhupada could do it. There weren't that many Indian devotees. We were all young, and the Westerners were coming, and they were bewildered by living in India. So it's a different culture, the early days like that. So Prabhupada had to personally manage everything in India. And although, you know, the movement was growing at such a rapid pace and there was so much money, Prabhupada would, you know, when he visited a temple, he would go through the accounts and he would say, if even one paisa was misplaced, Prabhupada would become furious. So the point is that we're worshipping the Lord, Narayana, we're worshipping Krishna, and Lakshmi is giving her blessings to facilitate that worship. But we should always remember that we shouldn't use even one farthing for herself. We should be careful. We should take what is necessary for ourselves, but utilize the rest in other Krishna conscious activities. That is a form. Ishvashna midam sarvam yat kinja yugatyam yugat tena taktena bhunjitaha magiraha kashasvindana. Everything that moves and doesn't move in his creation is owned and controlled by the Lord. Therefore, one should take what is necessary for himself, because just like a father provides for his children, the Lord has given us so much of life. Take what is necessary for himself, leaving the rest aside. So when Lakshmi gives her blessings, and Sita Devi gives her blessings, We should take what is necessary, but not take a farthing more and utilize it in the service of the Lord. This way we'll remain spiritually strong and healthy in Krishna consciousness, and this way the world will continue to expand by her blessings. So these are some lessons that we can learn from the appearance of Lord Ramachandra. Prabhupada, of course, in this purport, he spends about four paragraphs talking about the tribulations that are involved in accepting a wife. So one might be wondering, well, this is, you know, Lord Ramachandra's appearance day, and this is a very relevant verse about the appearance of the Lord, and Prabhupada's talking about the entanglement of family life. Well, what is that? But I had personal experience of Prabhupada's preaching in this way, that we were in Hyderabad, and Prabhupada was opening the temple in Hyderabad. He was installing the deities there. The devotees had built a temple, and it came time for opening the temple, and we were going to install, there were three sets of deities, I can't remember. Big, beautiful Radha Krishna deities. But anyway, Prabhupada did a huge condo program of 50,000 people there, and you know, it was really nice. And then one night Prabhupada was giving darshan in his, it was actually, we went to a life member's house. We accompanied Prabhupada to a life member's house, and I was fortunate to be sitting right at Prabhupada's lotus feet. And Prabhupada gave a short talk. I think I was a little tired that night, and then one Indian Mataji, very big Indian Mataji, elderly, about 50 or 55 years of age, you know, she raised her hand, she had a question. So I think Prabhupada was lecturing about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or something, and impressing upon the Indian people how his movement is spreading amongst the Westerners. But she asked a question completely out of the blue. She said, Swamiji, what is the purpose of Lord Ramachandra's coming to this world? Why did Lord Ramachandra come to this world? Prabhupada could have spoken in some Ritranaya Sadunam Vinashaya Chadriskritam. He comes to uplift the devotees and protect them from the demons. He comes to preach religious truth. But Prabhupada shocked all of us. He said very calmly, he said, the reason, Prabhupada, so I get, the reason that Lord Ramachandra has come is to show the miseries of accepting a wife. The lady, her mouth dropped open, you know, and like, everyone was just shocked. Even us, you know, well, that answered. And that was it. That's what Prabhupada said. I mean, he can maybe give a few sentences more, but he said, you know, the Lord comes, he has his many, by doing one thing, many things are achieved. So I guess that night, maybe I can only imagine that Prabhupada, you know, either wrote this purport about that time or remembered that particular incident or whatever. Somehow it may have been connected, but that's what he wanted to say, that Lord Ramachandra, when he was going to the forest, he actually was planning to go alone. You know, he didn't want to take Sita Devi. He was going, you know, he was banished to the forest for, you know, 14 years or whatever. But he, Sita,